Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Kahilu Theater on Hawaii Island, presenting pianist Kenny Broberg 7 p.m. Thursday, March 29th. Tickets at kahilutheater.org.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, you are now the CEO. What happens next?
I was on the sidelines thinking what I would do if I got it. And when I got it, I did it.
Also, PepsiCo CEO Indra Nooyi on how to run a company instead of getting run over by it.
There's no book you can read. You have to develop the book as you go along.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
This evening at 7. Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Achieve 3000, supporting Hawaii's educators with Smarty Ants, a foundational reading approach for teaching students to read in pre-K through second grade. Achieve3000.com.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a discussion of policing in Honolulu and about the role of police departments in society. We invite our listeners throughout the state of Hawaii to take part by calling us at 1-877-941-3689.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us this morning on The Conversation is the chief of Honolulu's police department, Susan Ballard. She became the department's 11th chief and Hawaii's first female chief of police on November 1st, 2017. She joined HPD in 1985 and worked in a wide range of field administrative assignments, including Narcotics Vice and the Criminal Investigations Division and the Downtown Chinatown Patrol District. As a commander, she has led the Kaneohe Kalihi Patrol Districts and the Finance Training and Central Receiving Divisions. Chief Ballard, welcome to The Conversation.
Thank you. Good to be here.
How's the transition been?
It's been actually very good. I have a great team. The officers have been quite supportive, as well as the community. So it's been fairly easy so far.
And you've had to deal with the transition with a number of the, the headlines regarding the previous chief and the federal cases that he's facing. How's that been?
It's actually been a lot better than I thought as far as a transition. Obviously, there were a lot of issues that we needed to address. But, you know, what I've seen is that public has just been so supportive and the hope that they have out there, as well as the hope of the officers. Because I always tell people it wasn't just the community that was devastated, but the officers in the department as well.
You described when you came in to your job, you described a shift in your approach. I think you used the term guardian versus warrior mentality. Could you describe that a little bit?
Sure. Back when in policing, you always were training people that, you know, everyone was kind of out to kill you, out to hurt you.
Yeah.
That's not true. The community is out there to support us. And, we just need to approach every situation. Obviously, you know, the officers need to be cautious.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they can't always have in their back of their mind that, they're going to shoot me or they're going to stab me or whatever the case may be. Because, you know, now it's more of a conversation, so let's try and talk to people and get their voluntary cooperation instead of having to use any type of force to get to where they need to go.
It must be tough to find a balance because you obviously do have to train your officers in dealing with deadly force, and it's part of their job in ways that it isn't part of other jobs. So how do you keep that in perspective?
There's a lot of scenario-based training out at the academy and also at our annual recall training for the officers to just sort of get them into the mindset. And, you know, one of the areas that they're really excelling in is like when we deal with people who call that might have some mental illness types of issues.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more talking instead of, making distance, putting a lot of distance or objects between you and who you're talking to. So, you give them the opportunity to try and calm down first so that you can talk to them. Because, I mean, let's face it, when we get mad, regardless of who you are, your common sense goes out the window. You know, the old caveman brain, kicks in.
Fight or flight. Right,
correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's, and so we're all human, right?
Right.
And I think it asks a lot sometimes of officers in those really difficult confrontational situations.
Yes, it does.
And Chief, the department has, had its share of black eyes in the past year. How do you restore the trust, with the community?
What we've been trying to do is, especially for me, is I try and get out in the public as much as I can, try and go out and give talks, whether it's to, sixth graders or, adults, Rotary clubs, anybody, who wants me to come and talk to them. I want to, because I want to get the message out that, we're here, we're part of you. We're part of the community. We live in the community. Every officer out there is part of your community, and we're there to help you out. And I'm not going to ever say that we're not going to make a mistake or misstep. We will. But you know what? The difference is that we're going to try and do everything for the right reason.
Chief Ballard, we've got a caller on the line with a couple of questions. Sean, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. One, I know that you're shorthanded. A bunch of officers. How can you be proactive with such a short workforce? And second, I noticed that all the construction sites, be it on traffic, on the road construction or regular construction sites, have a police officer. Is it really necessary? Because in the mainland, they don't do that. They have usually the contractor provides traffic people, and that way you guys can have more time to do your job. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. As far as the traffic control, those are actually off-duty officers that are hired by the company, so they are not being taken off of regular patrol, and that's what we call special duty. And as far as the staff shortages, you're absolutely correct, but we're instituting many things. For example, one is the parking enforcement. We're using our parking enforcement folks to give parking citations instead of the officers, so they can free the officers out to do their job. We've also instituted a mandatory staffing minimum that will go up 5% every year until we hit the 100% level. And then another thing that we're taking a look at is we're going to be instituting in June a program called our alternate call servicing. And we're actually going to be taking a lot of the reports over the telephone so that the officers out on the road will be freed up to be able to do more proactive policing.
On the mandatory staffing, I mean, does that require consult and confer with the unions?
Well, the unions are, I mean, it's anything that we go above what we have, they love us for it. So, yeah, it's not even a matter of fact, they love the fact that we're instituting a mandatory staffing level and increasing it. When I first came aboard, they were running about 60-65%. So, in other words, if you had eight officers that should have been in your neighborhood, there might have only been four or five. So we're making sure that every year we go up. It is a cost factor, and it's going to force us to start hiring faster, and we've put some controls in place to try and increase the amount of time, lessen the amount of time it takes to hire, as well as doing more recruit classes.
The percentage is about what, in the 60s now?
No, we've increased it. This year started at 75%, and next year will go to 80, the following year 85, 90, 95, and then 100%.
With that, if you were at 100% tomorrow, how would you deploy those extra people?
Well, with those extra people, we'd get a lot more involved in the community policing aspect and be more proactive instead of having to just be reactive and go from calls to call, from 911 calls to another 911 call, because that's really ineffective as far as policing is concerned.
Is there, the whole concept of the beat cop, who's kind of at home in the neighborhood, walks the beat, knows the local storekeepers, does that just take a really huge amount of staffing to be able to implement?
It does. And you'll see it in, like in Waikiki and Chinatown, where you see the people who walk, because those are usually our young officers who are just getting out. Mm-hmm. So we have the more staffing, and it's a training issue for them, too. I'd love to do that throughout the entire island, but obviously an officer who walks cannot cover the amount of area that somebody could in a car.
It's just not that efficient. But I would think that in long-term, it would meet some long-term goals.
Absolutely, and we always remind the officers, you know, when you have some downtime, park your car, get out of your car, you know, go into the businesses, talk story with them. You know, if you see the neighbors out in the yard, just stop and talk story with them, you know, and just get to know the people who are in your area and let them get to know you.
That's all part of what you were talking about, Catherine.
Right. Can you talk more about the effort with community policing and the neighborhood watch programs? Because I know in my neighborhood, we just recently had a meet and greet with the new guys that are in there, just to kind of get to know each other.
Absolutely. The neighborhood watches are always so good because it allows the community to get together with officers and get to know them, answer any concerns that they may have. And, you know, we'd like to encourage more people to become involved with the neighborhood security watches, you know, whether it's walking in their neighborhoods, because it's your neighborhood. With the number of officers we have, we can't be everywhere. But with all your eyes and your ears letting us know what's going on, that's what's going to make your neighborhood safe.
Where do the efforts of somebody walking a neighborhood end? You know, at what point does somebody who is doing a neighborhood patrol step out of the picture and bring in the police? What's the ideal?
Would be observation. So if they see something that they think that it's suspicious, then, you know, call us. Call 911 and let the officers know. And usually if it's a formal security walk, there is an officer who walks with them. But, you know, even if you're driving and you see something suspicious, just call 911 and let the officers know, and somebody can come and respond and take a look at it.
Just speaking of 911, you know, on the day of the famous missile alert, 911 was overwhelmed,
yes.
Quite understandably. Mm-hmm. What do you do about something like that?
You know, our dispatchers did such a great job on that day. It was just it was amazing to see the calls that they fielded. So what happens with our 911, if it does become overloaded, then the calls, instead of it shutting down, the calls are actually sent out to an alternate call center, which is located in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll take the calls. And then what happened at the missile crisis, unfortunately, is that those calls that were missed from Colorado were brought back to us, and we needed to call each and every single one of those people back to make sure mm-hmm. that, you know, there wasn't anything wrong. So, I mean, our dispatchers did such a great job.
Seems like an overwhelming amount of work in a very short time.
It was.
Do we have any shortages on the dispatch side?
Absolutely. We're always looking for dispatchers. So between officers and dispatchers, it's pretty much open hiring. If you go onto our website, you can actually put in your application.
Can we talk about the safety issue in Waikiki? You covered that area early on in your career, and recently they had the crime safety summit at one of the hotels because of the incidents there. And you raised the possibility of maybe re-examining the cabaret license and the hours rolling from 4 a.m. to possibly 2.
Yes. So much crime, and not just in Waikiki, but everywhere, it boils down, when you take a look at it, alcohol or drugs. So if you're high on drugs or you've been drinking too much, you make yourself a victim somewhat, because your common sense is gone. You're not really aware of your surroundings. And so people see you maybe stumbling down the street. And so they figured, oh, you're an easy target, or if you're not with somebody else who can take care of you. So, those types of things. And what we see with cabaret licenses is that when the bars close at 2 o'clock, so you could have 8 bars that close at 2 o'clock, and then they're all going to be funneling into maybe one bar that closes at 4 o'clock. So you have, hundreds of drunk people or people who've been drinking into one bar, and now you're going to have a lot of people who've been drinking, and that never really works well.
So will you petition to have that rolled back, or, what are you trying to do?
Well, that's up to the community. Obviously, we support that. The Honolulu Police Department supports that. But if that's something that the Waikiki community wants and the businesses, then they're the ones that are going to need to take the lead because, you know, if it's that important to them, then they're the ones that takes the lead. We'll support them in any way that we can.
There's a caller on the line from Kaneohe, where you used to be the chief of that department. Michelle?
Yeah, good hello.
Yeah.
Aloha. First off, I wanted to congratulate Chief Ballard. This is just so exciting to finally have a woman police chief. I was just so sure that it was going to be one of the good old boys again, and I'm so glad that didn't happen. So that kind of leads into my question of, is there going to be more done to help the public's perception that the good old boy network is not still going to be constantly in play in the police department? And does the police department now do anything more actively about hiring more women and for the attitudes in the police department to be more accepting of female recruits and the placements of female police officers? And I'll take the rest of this off air.
Thanks, Michelle.
As far as women in the police department, we're always looking to recruit more women. You know, I try and talk to, you know, even like sixth graders, seventh graders, you know, to start planning in their mind. This is an awesome career. You know, people's perception of the police department is that, you know, they're only out there patrolling. But there's so many other things that you can do in the police department. You can work with kids. You can work in narcotics. You know, you can go work with the community. There's just so many opportunities for you once you get in the police department. And not to mention, you know, the retirement is good. You know, and it really is a really great career to be involved in. As far as the attitudes towards women in the department, you know, there's always going to be people, you know, women, you know, sometimes are our own worst enemies. But yet at the same time, you know, we all try and get along. There's going to be men who are going to dislike. And I don't think it dislikes them because they're women. Maybe dislikes them just because, like anything else, it's a personality issue. You know, and there are going to be people who misstep. But when that happens, we're going to make sure that, you know, that we address it.
Chief, when you joined the department, what was the approximate percentage of women? That was late 80s?
Correct. I want to say it was probably about 5 to 6% at that time. There were not very many females in the department.
Yeah. And what is it now?
Right now it's at 11%. So there's 220 female officers out of the almost 2,200 officers, uniformed officers, mm-hmm. that we have.
So there's work to be done.
Absolutely. And you know, a lot of times the women think that, you know, this, they can't do this career, but you can. I mean, we're going to train you, we're going to teach you how to do everything, and then once you get in, your opportunities are limitless. You know, people who are doing social work right now from UH, please apply, because so much of our job is almost turning into, you know, types of social work, and you could really have a huge impact on the community through working through the police department.
You do interface a lot with the homeless, you know, all the officers out in the field, and increasingly homeless people with mental illnesses. Is there any additional training that the officers are getting to deal with that on patrol?
They do. Every year, we have what we call annual recall training, and there's a class on dealing with the mentally ill. So they're constantly getting updated on, you know, what needs to be done. You know, and the main thing is that, you know, we just want to try and get people the services that we need. And we've one of our lieutenants has created this program. It's called Project Help, which actually works together with the different social agencies to get the assistance that some of these people, the homeless, may need.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking with Honolulu Police Chief Susan Ballard. We'd like to know your perspective on recent changes at HPD and about your experiences with police departments wherever in Hawaii you may live. You can take part by calling us at 1-877-941-3689. And we've got a couple of callers on the line. Daniel is calling from Volcano. Daniel?
Hi.
Hi, Daniel. What's
Thank
on your
you
mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I would like to make a suggestion, and it's out of experience, and that is that the police could adjudicate the landlord-tenant code instead of having to go to the court. It's a pretty simple procedure, and it would resolve, I think, a lot of other problems that people have and provide a very valuable service for people who are mentally ill and have a very limited income, and make it easy for someone that has an extra room in their house to be able to provide a, you know, certain meaningful service or something, and also be able to call the police and resolve any problems that they may have and not have to go down to court over something when they're trying to create a nice opportunity for a win-win.
Daniel, I'm not clear on what kind of disputes you're talking about.
Landlord-tenant code. If you rent a room to somebody in your house or wherever that you live, and there's a disagreement on the rent, on how much they paid or what have you, that you have to take them to court normally. In other words, a police officer could very easily resolve what's called the landlord-tenant code. It's a very simple set of rules that go on. And it's just a matter of receipts and looking at the evidence. And it's something that a police officer can handle just as easy as a judge. It's not a hard thing to do. I've been through it at least a dozen of them, maybe 20.
Thanks, Daniel.
Well, I'm not sure how it works over on the beautiful Big Island over there. Volcano is a very beautiful place. You're lucky to live there. But over here on Oahu, I know that a lot of times if there is a dispute between the landlord and the tenant, that the police are called. And we will try, because it's a civil matter and it's not a law enforcement matter, we really can't enforce the landlord-tenant code. But what we try to do over here is if there is an argument between the landlord and the tenant, we'll come and try and talk to each party and, trying to mediate it to get a resolution. And if they cannot, then unfortunately it is a civil matter that would need to go, to the courts. Otherwise, the police department would end up getting into, making legal decisions, which we're not really trained to do.
That also speaks to a larger issue, which is there are a lot of things that people think are the kuleana of police when they're not, right?
Correct. Yeah.
If we could talk about vacation rentals, because that does change the character of the neighborhood. I know up in Kaimuki, there was a case where someone rented a unit for Airbnb and actually had some 11 pounds of crystal meth delivered to that address, and also an Airbnb unit in Kailua. So talk about the criminal element in vacation rentals.
Yeah, vacation rentals, and I know that we have a lot of illegal vacation rentals here on Oahu, and it does. It changes the character of the neighborhood. So you have a transient population who comes in to your neighborhood, and they don't really care about what's going on. They care about having a good time here on vacation. And so if they see something, they may not call it in, even though it might be some kind of crime that might be occurring. And at the same way, like you're saying, we even had a case where there was somebody renting out a house and it was being used as prostitution. So, a lot of these types of things, because they're not really overseen, especially if they're illegal, so there's a lot of things that can occur. So it is very important that, the city starts enforcing these illegal vacation rentals.
Do you find that your officers are being called for, noise complaints, where this happens?
I'm not sure of the number of calls that we get. I haven't really heard, so I'm assuming that it probably has not been that much of a concern. Mostly it's parking, because, they have a lot of rental cars that come with it.
And I would imagine that sometimes the units themselves, if they know their vacation rentals, they might be targeted, because they see transients coming and going, and they know maybe nobody's there to watch the place.
Correct.
I'm wondering how many, what percentage of calls to 911. I mean, there's got to be a significant number of nuisance calls. Things that could have been handled by someone other than a police officer, or just didn't merit a 911 call at all. Is that a factor?
I don't know what the percentage is, but there are a lot of calls. And understandably, the community doesn't know who to turn to, so they call 911 and ask for the police officers. So, we get called to people, falling out of their wheelchair and need help getting back in,
mm-hmm.
Or chickens in their yard, So we get called. It runs the gamut, and the officers are really good. They're going to respond to everything and try and help out. because there are sometimes their services are limited, you know, for other agencies. And so the officers try and do what they can to, you know, to help out the community.
If you have something going on that is not an emergency but merits some police attention, it doesn't rise to the level of a 911 call, what would you do?
Well, we have two types of calls that come in. We have like what we call a priority one call, and those are the calls where the officers need to respond right away. So a burg in progress or a robbery or something right. like that. And then we have what we call priority two calls, which are the types of calls that you're talking about. So when an officer becomes available, then they'll be sent. But if there's a priority one call, that'll always take you know, precedence over any other types of calls. And these other ones, actually, you know, you may wait for hours for an officer to come, because if they're tied up on a large case, then they're not going to respond to the priority two calls till later. And I think that's when you know, if they just want to make a report, like that's where our alternate call servicing is going to come in. We even started exploring like the 311 non-emergency number. But what we found out is, as my sergeant told me, that is in charge of the program, she told me, she says, well, if you make it, they will come. So what happened, a good example is what she was saying, is like in New York City, they instituted a 311, and they're getting over 200,000 calls a day just on 311. So our fear is that if we start a 311, that there'll be so many calls that the officers wouldn't be able to respond, and then it would be a failure. So we're taking this slowly.
The city's been dealing with a lot of abandoned and derelict cars, and I think the officers get called out initially to check out to see what the call's all about. Talk about that.
Sure. And obviously, with a lot of abandoned cars, our first concern is it stolen? So they'll run the check, the license check or the VIN number, to see if it's stolen. And unfortunately, being an island, we have very limited space to put these abandoned vehicles. And so we ran into a problem with a lot of the military folks who were leaving the island, and then they were just abandoning the vehicles on the side of the road. And in addition, or sometimes they would sell the car to someone who's local here, but they wouldn't register the car, and it would still show the military. So it would appear that, you know, the military folks did it, but it really, in fact, wasn't. So we've been working closely with all the military branches here on the island, and they have been, like, being so helpful, so that we're trying to clear up the backlog. So there's a system now that, as long as we notify the owner of the car, they've got 60 days, and then after the 60 days, then the tow lot can go ahead and try and auction off the car. And once they auction off those cars, it's going to, you know, relieve some space, and now we can tow some more cars in. But because of the lack of space here on the island, unfortunately, sometime if there's nothing there, we can't move the car.
But you're getting more of those calls.
Absolutely, yeah.
Lack of space intrudes on a lot of your activities, doesn't
it? Oh, it does.
I can only imagine. Here's a written question from a caller, two written questions. One of them is, in New York, police are never on patrol alone. Why is that not the case here?
Because this is a wonderful place to live here in Hawaii. You know, Hawaii, Oahu is one of the safest places in the United States. It would be great to have a partner with you all the time, but unfortunately, obviously, that would double the number of officers that we would need, and then the staff shortage would be even more. But we found that the one car here on Oahu works. Because New York, they probably have a lot more square footage or square mileage, I guess, that they have to cover, versus, you know, if our officers need backup, there's usually somebody relatively close can get there quickly.
The second question, also a written question, caller is on a neighborhood patrol and heard that officers are resigning. Is retention an issue, and what is being done to address it?
Officers are, I mean, we're really not getting any more retirements than we have in the past. There's usually about the same number every year. There's probably about 30% of the department, I want to say, or I'm sorry, I think it's less, it was 20% of the department is eligible for retirement, which means that they have 25 years or more. And so it's constantly that we're trying to, replace the officers who retire, because once you hit 25 years, they can retire, and we'd like them to stay longer. But, you know, some of them look for a second career, to move on with their life. So we're not seeing in any large numbers more than what it ever is.
I recall there was a time when we were really surprised when I think folks from Clark County and from the Pacific Northwest were coming here and recruiting our people after starting and getting trained, that the pay was significantly higher and the cost of living was so much lower that it was really attracting a lot of our people to go back to the mainland.
That was and you know, we still lose a few every year to the mainland, and obviously the big issue is the cost of living, but I believe that you know, SHOPO working with the city and through negotiations, the salary has increased. I believe that it's a living salary, a very good living salary now, and you know, there's options for the officers. It's not just their base salary, but they get overtime for working holidays, you know, overtime, you know, if they earn it, and also, you know, the special duty to try and, you know, increase the amount of money, you know, that they earn so that they can, you know, make sure that they provide for their families. And what we are looking at doing, and probably starting next year, one of the next things that our next step, we've reduced the hiring from taking like over a year to about 6 months now. And our next step is that we do want to look at actually us going to the mainland and getting lateral transfers over here, as well as from the neighbor islands, and put them through a shortened recruit academy to try and draw people into our department.
That's 6 months. What happens in that 6 months?
They apply online, and then they take a written test, and then they have to do what we call it's like a pre-assessment type. They go to the academy, and they go through a PT type of test. They go through a psychological background check, all these types of things, mm-hmm. before they're actually offered the job, and then they would have to clear a medical.
And then you go to the academy.
Then you go to the academy, yeah.
You mentioned SHOPO. You're involved in a case right now before the Labor Board connected with Tenari Mafala's reassignment. What can you share with us? What's your position on the peer program and why you made that switch?
Unfortunately, the case is still going on, so I'm not really at liberty to talk about that right now. It'll continue on, I believe, probably towards the end of April or so.
Can you talk about the peer program? And because I understand that you would help start that.
Right. Yeah. So the peer program is currently with our Community Affairs Division. And so we've put out a call for volunteers, and we had like 40 of the officers that are going to be volunteering. They went through interviews. And so the commander down in Community Affairs Division, along with the chaplains, are, you know, working at expanding the program and getting a lot of people involved. Because like I told them, this program, it's not my program. It's not the department's program. This is a program for the officers, by the officers, so that they can support each other in their times of need.
Chief, we might have found a recruit for you. Andrea from Wailuku is on the line. Andrea?
Hi. Hi, Chief Fowler. This is Andrea. I'm actually living here in Wailuku, and I've been super on the fence about applying, especially the last 2 weeks. And it was purely coincidental that I have to be that I'm listening to the radio right now, and this has been super informative, and I'm going to be applying. So
yay!
I'm really grateful.
So we've already talked you into it.
All right, good job.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Andrea. There's another caller on another line who wants to make a comment about our earlier discussion of Airbnbs. He's an Airbnb host. Kevin?
Hi, how are you today?
I'm all right, Kevin. You're in Haiku, Maui, yeah?
Yes, we are. And first of all, I want to thank the police chief. I'm very excited to have her appointed this position. We need more women in positions like this. And I think women make tremendous police officers. We want more women like Andrea from Wailuku and our police chief to be involved. I think it's awesome. With respect to the vacation rental, not necessarily Airbnb, I find that 99% of the vacation rentals around would be proactive when reporting a problem. And so I think the characterization that your host made earlier with respect to two or three of the incidences that may have occurred, whether it be the meth thing or the prostitution thing, are sort of unbalanced. And if you're going to present something like that to an industry that's already having a difficult time with public perception, I think it's kind of highly unfair to do it in that manner. In fact, I would recommend that maybe you bring in some vacation rental guests or hosts guests and hosts for another program and have them give you their opinions and then invite callers to offer in. But congratulations, Police Chief. I'm really happy for you and our community. And I'll listen to your comments off air. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. And, you know, Kevin, I see what you're saying. And I think our point was the illegal B&Bs, not the legal ones, because, you know, the legal ones are there and they know that they have a right to be there. But I believe we're talking, you know, the illegal ones that they know that they can perhaps do things that they wouldn't normally do. If they knew that, you know, they were actually licensed. So and obviously this is Oahu, which is a lot different from Maui and the Big Island as well as Kauai. You know, and so we see a lot more over here. And you're right. I mean, there's just there are a few cases like this. But I think in general, it's just with the neighborhoods for the illegal ones, it's frustrating to them because, you know, they've got to deal with the parking issues and everything else.
Well, one of the things that emerged from his call, Chief, was that, you know, it's the standout incident that colors the whole operation, right?
Absolutely.
And it doesn't take much.
No.
Before you've really, and you've created a perception. You've seen that with HPD. It doesn't take much to really alter a perception. That's what you're working to to change now, yeah?
Yes, and you're so correct, because, you know, it just takes you know, one thing, it's like, well, here we go again. And, you know, and like I tell people over and over again, it says, you know, we're going to misstep, we're going to make a mistake, but you know what? We're going to address it. If it's a mistake that our officers make, we are going to address it, and we're going to do the right thing.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking with Honolulu Police Chief Susan Ballard, and we'd like to know your perspective on recent changes at HPD and about your experiences with police departments wherever in Hawaii you live. You can take part by calling us at 1-877-941-3689.
And what we see, you know, whenever we open up the phone lines like this, Chief, is just what a wide variety of responsibilities somebody like you has, right?
There's a lot. It's amazing, you know, and, you know, I really depend on the people, you know, who are working in the various areas, you know, to do a good job. And they do, you know, and they keep me informed. And obviously I can't know everything, but, you know, we try and know a little bit of everything. We're like the jack of all trades and a master of none.
How helpful is your past experience in all that?
Oh, it's been huge because I've been so many different places, and I always tell the officers when they come up with things sometimes, and I always laugh and I tell them, you know, that's one of the problems when somebody's been around since Moby Dick was a minnow. I said, you know, I've been there, done that. I knew how it happened, you know, and so I can kind of give them the history. And that's what's so great is that, you know, the history sometimes is lost from people who retire, you know, so sometimes you end up reinventing the wheel. But having people, you know, like myself, who's got a lot of years, Deputy Chief McCarthy, who has more than me, is probably over there cringing right now. But, you know, there's a lot of history that we can draw on and tell people, well, you know, this is what happened and this is why this came about. And it makes a lot more sense when they know, understand why.
Now, when you started in the 80s, it was probably maybe Chief Doug Gibb, you know, Chief Nakamura. You've seen a lot of the top brass come and go. Is there anybody that you reached out to for advice? Is there anybody that you maybe hold up just, you know, because of the example that they set for you?
Probably one of the first females was Barbara Uphouse Wong. You know, I never had the pleasure of working for her. But, you know, I would watch her, and her steadiness, you know, and her fairness was always so impressive. You know, as far as the current chiefs, you know, Police Chief, retired Chief Lee Donahue, he was my mentor. I pretty much came up in the administrative ranks from captain to major underneath him. You know, Chief Stephen Watereye, Bill Clark, Deputy Chief Bill Clark, all of them were there, and they, you know, they really helped me out and gave me a lot of guidance.
There's a caller from Maui with a question. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi. You had a question?
Well, it's kind of a question. Yeah. I'd like to remain anonymous, but I live here in Maui, and a few years ago, I had a car accident. Somebody, that drunk driver, rear-ended me, and the police came. And I immediately, so it was early in the evening, and I was on my way to dinner, and an officer came to the accident, and I was very injured, just back injury, not blood and guts or anything. But the cop came up and went to the driver of the truck who hit me, who was speeding at 70 miles an hour anyway, and did a, hey, brother, how's your dad? And I said, can we do a sobriety check, please? And the cop said to me, oh, no worry, everything looks fine here. Meanwhile, my brother-in-law was talking to, he didn't know that he was my brother-in-law, the driver of the drunk driver. And he said to my brother-in-law right before the cops came, he goes, oh, man, we was drinking. We threw all the bottles out of the window. You know, who? So thank God, you know. Oh, I'm worried. So in the end of it, the guy didn't get a DUI. There was no sobriety check issued. And I've been very injured. I've lost my job for the last 11 years. I was a commercial pilot. It's so wrong. And what does one citizen do to... I don't know, to do something about it without getting chased, harassed, ticketed, blacklisted.
Well, let's,
you know, because it's not real clear all the time with who's good and who's not good in the police force.
I just want to clarify what your question actually is, and it sounds as if what you're saying is, if you suspect malfeasance on the part of a police officer, what do you do?
You can always, report it to, right now it's called our professional standards office. If you believe that the incident was handled incorrectly, I hope that you're healing, and I hope that everything is going well with you. And I'm sorry for your incident of what happened. And if in fact that's what occurred, then, you know, it was wrong. You should have had whatever medical treatment was needed at the scene if you were injured. And obviously the officer should have, made the report and done what they needed to do. But once again, if you feel that the officer did not do it right, then please step forward, because we do not tolerate any harassment. A lot of people think that there's going to be any backlash if they make a report, and that's absolutely incorrect, because if we even get wind of it, the punishment for that officer is going to be a lot worse than what might have happened if, from the original complaint.
And the thing to do is to go to the police commission, correct?
They can go, if it's depending upon the time element, they can go to the police commission. But if it's a criminal type of thing, then they can go to the the PSO or our old internal affairs as well.
Okay. Does the public trust either process?
I would hope that they do. I've seen our internal affairs and our PSO now. And I've seen the investigations. They do very, very thorough investigations. They go search for witnesses. They go pull videos. So it's a very complete investigation when it's done. And it's not just reviewed by one person or by the chief. It's reviewed by, six or seven other people. And everybody has a right to say, and then, at the end, we take all the evidence, and then we make a decision based on the evidence that we have.
I hear that, she's from the caller, that there is maybe this perception that it's who you know. I recall when I first got here, I was told, oh, if you don't want to get, pulled over and ticketed, get a Chopo sticker, get a Kamehameha school sticker, get a St. Louis sticker. And so, how do you get around that perception? If you know a cop or if you know somebody, then it'll go away or they won't cite you.
Officers always have discretion, but for every situation. They shouldn't be doing it for friendship. And I think the fact that we're actually arresting other police officers, it shows that our officers are out there doing what they're supposed to be doing. Because if in fact it was true that we're taking care of our own, then, none of these officers would ever get arrested. But we see it over and over again because officers make mistakes just like everybody else. We try and get it to the officers that, you do things for the right reason. And even if you don't know somebody, if you're going to give them a citation, and let's say they have a, young kid in the car and they went over the center line because they were dealing with their young child, that's kind of up to the officer. If they want to give a citation, they can. If they choose not to, then, depending upon the situation, then they're not required to. And that's kind of like the discretion that the officers have. And we never want to take that away because it's the best thing for the community, because sometimes you do things and you're like, oh, you know, it's an honest mistake. And do you really want to get arrested or cited for an honest mistake?
You had a situation where you had some officers. The allegation was that they mistreated a homeless man, and you called the FBI to investigate. Can you talk about that, about why you went outside?
Because the case is still under investigation, I really can't, other than the fact that, you know, we wanted another set of eyes, and that, you know, because of the egregiousness of the situation, we just thought, we made a decision amongst us, ourselves, that we felt that this was going to be, you know, the best way to do it. And it wasn't just the FBI, because what everyone needs to understand is that anytime we have a complaint like this, we also do an administrative investigation. So our PSO is also investigating this case on the administrative side. And sometimes that side, the administrative side, is a lot more harsh because than the criminal side for the officer.
A couple of calls on the line talking about traffic issues. Bill from the North Shore. Hi, Bill. What's on your mind?
I've lived on Oahu for 50 years and worked in the city departments before, so I'm just in awe of our new chief's bravery in trying to change the culture of a department. I drive a lot, and when there's a problem with traffic, it seems like traffic gets stalled by accidents, etc., but it still moves until the police show up. And then it just gets a whole lot worse. And my observation leads me to believe that there's actually no training in the department to the beat officers on how to facilitate traffic normally, to expected delays, and more importantly, to accidents, where particularly on freeways, the efforts to protect the officers now, they seem to be setting up an extra dead lane around accidents, which removes really important number of driving lanes on up to at rush hours and stuff. And both training at all levels and an emphasis by management that facilitating traffic flow is important is the only counterbalance I see to the inability of the state to fund the infrastructure changes that our population has created. We don't have enough roads. Tourism is expected to double in the next 5 years. The police are getting an unfair burden in trying to keep things moving, but the right form of training and exchanges with other departments that have more experience.
Well, Bill, we'll ask the chief to clarify that for you. Thanks for your call.
Okay, you know, especially on the freeway, there's actually a law, the move over law. So there is always that one lane that's going to be coned off because of the law. And it's mostly for the safety. We've had a couple of fatalities of officers on the freeway from people who are not paying attention because they're too busy looking at the accident. And then an officer is killed because of that. And that was the impetus of the law. And the other thing is, as far as, you know, closing off roadways and trying to reroute traffic, when the officer gets there, they have to make the judgment as to what is the safest so that, you know, the person involved in the accident does not get injured, or even if it's a fatality. And I know, you know, with our road systems, you're right. There's absolutely, you know, a lot of times because of our limited space here on the island, when we have to close down someplace, you know, it sometimes takes hours. But what we try and tell people is that, you know, think about it. If it was your family member that was out there on the roadway, stranded on the freeway, or your family member who died, you would want the police to do the most thorough investigation that you possibly could and get them the help that they may need.
On the traffic, I know there were times where there was a fatality. You know, they would mark the spot with a big X, and you'd have the chopper go up to do an assessment. Is there a program to use drones at all or anything like that to kind of reduce the wait time, you know, in which the areas are opened up to regular traffic?
Unfortunately, the drones is a whole nother issue. We really would like to start using them more, but right now we're limited. I mean, we have to go through FAA training. Yeah. You know, I know the legislature was looking at any time that the police department sends up a drone, we had to get a search warrant, even though it was in a public place. So, you know, there was a lot of issues with that. We're still trying to move ahead. And we do still send up the helicopters to do, especially for some of the fatalities, you know, because we get new software and it's going to try and get the roads open quicker. But unfortunately, you know, when there's debris all over the place, you know, we still have to make sure that we document everything, because if not, then when we go to court, we're going to lose the case. And if you have a loved one who's killed in a fatality due to a drunk driver or someone not paying attention, that's the last thing that you want to happen.
How bad a problem is drunk driving in Hawaii today?
You know, it's about the same that it has been. You know, we continue with enforcement for drunk driving. You know, unfortunately, our fear is with the medical marijuana, or if they ever look at, you know, increase or having recreational marijuana, one of the side issues on that is going to be, you know, people who are driving under the influence of marijuana. And for the officer, it's not as easy as doing the field sobriety test on the side of the road. There's a test that's called the DRE, the drug recognition expert, and it just takes a lot of time and a lot of resources to administer that to someone who might be under the influence of drugs.
Has impaired driving in areas where marijuana has been legalized been a growing problem?
You know, we really haven't been tracking it, and I'm sure that there's probably a lot of people who have been driving under the influence of drugs or marijuana that we're not catching, that even though they show the indicia, because we don't have the resources for the, or the officers who are DRE trained, because it does take a lot of training. It takes months of training to get somebody DRE qualified.
Would that be part of your wish list for...
Oh, absolutely. My wish list just keeps getting longer and longer. The mayor's going to hate me before too long.
Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with? One final thought?
I just want to say thank you to the community for your support and, you know, the hope that I see on people's faces. And I don't want to let anybody down. You know, we're going to continue doing the best job that we can. And if you ever have any problems or any issues, please don't hesitate to call. And we're hiring, so it's a great job.
Maybe we recruited, you know, some
I hope so. Along with Andrea, come on, girl, put in your application.
You know, I'm not sure people that many people realize, as you said, that there are always jobs available. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Continuous. I think we've got about, I think right now about 150 vacancies that we're trying to fill. And then, of course, obviously the ongoing retirements, we all have to fill those. As soon as we get those filled, we're going to, you know, go to the city to create more, more positions so that we can do more things out in the community.
And as you said earlier, it's been a good career for you, right?
Awesome. I you know, I never would have thought I was going to be a police officer in a million years, but it's been a good job.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank
Our
you.
Guest today has been Honolulu Police Chief Susan Ballard.
And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show.
If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact our talkback line and leave your comments. We have a couple of calls holding on the line. We'll record those and address them later. You can reach us through our talkback line at 808-792-8217.
I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.